This is Relatively Football. I am one of your two hosts, Theo Lloyd-Hughes. I'm here with my lovely sister, Flo. I'm calling in from New Orleans. She's in London. We're going to be talking women's football. It's been a hell of a week. I hope you're doing well. Listener, Flo, how are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. I mean, I feel like I should be asking you how you're doing because it's a pretty crazy week in the US of A.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it feels like it gets a bit easier the crazier it gets. Obviously, no power in hurricanes last week. A small election you might not have heard about this week. You know, I didn't really get any sleep Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, but luckily managed to pass out last night and feeling a lot better this morning. But yeah, we live in a time of unprecedented people's behavior and treatment of the truth. So I want to be truthful and factful in this podcast, and let's show our integrity as family, as appreciators of the game, and let's go from there. Does that sound good?
Yeah, so why don't we kick things off with Liverpool 5, Man City 2.
I really enjoyed Liverpool demanding the win against Man City in the County Cup.
All I care about is the truth, and I think, you know, people need to see the truth about this result.
Yeah, I was also surprised to see London City Lionesses claim the Conti Cup this week. But, you know, a victory is a victory. And
Anyway, how?
There's going to be a recount, you know, at Prince's Park. And, yeah, I heard the Arsenal result was not final. All right, jokes aside, what do you end up watching? Chelsea Spurs. Chelsea sorted out their streams, thank God. A little bit of YouTube action. The FA player even picked it up. Everyone was getting involved on the streams. And we were treated to quite a good game. Chelsea ended up winning it 2-0. What were your feelings about another win in the Cup for Chelsea?
Yeah, so Chelsea Spurs was the only game I watched in full on the stream. Thank you so much, Chelsea. Very kind of you. Good quality stream. I also really enjoyed watching.
Look at that quality. HD, baby.
Yeah, and full commentary. Matt Davies Adams, lovely guy, does a lot of WSL and EFL stuff, as well as Chelsea TV with Laura Bassett by his side. I like that they, you know, put effort into it. And I also really enjoyed watching the FA Youth Cup final highlights at halftime. What a game that was. I'd hate to, like, take the topic off women's football, but that was a great game. Chelsea beat Man City in that one. I think it was 3-2 in the end. Great game. Anyway, back to Conti Cup. It was an interesting one. I think friend of the pod, Jesse JPH, their assessment was, I think, the sharpest of this one. They talked a lot about how Chelsea looked quite rusty, and I would agree with that one. And for the majority of the game, yeah, they were just struggling to create, which is very unlike them this season especially. And they had a pretty strong team on the pitch. Spurs defended quite well, but the sort of usual Spurs vibe we've seen this season, which is kind of clinging on. And it was, yeah, definitely a sign of a team that haven't played together in a very long time. And it'll be interesting how the impact that will have potentially on the WSL game this weekend when they have to play Everton, because I thought they did look a little bit rusty with players coming back from the international break and the FA Cup last weekend. So there hasn't been a lot of training, and yeah, they just didn't look very sharp. And obviously because their game, they lost a game because of coronavirus against Villa, they do look like they're not as sync as they probably would have been before that break came along. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, I suppose it's a shame in regards to continuity for the break to happen, or coronavirus outbreak to happen, after they so comprehensively beat City in that fantastic match you were at King's Meadow. So I think, yeah, Emma Hayes, this is a bit of a statement, you know, trying to get her best players back, trying to play without Frank Kirby. I kind of agree with everything you said, but I would give Spurs a little bit more credit. I think we saw another really good defensive hour from Spurs. And I think maybe where Spurs improved a little bit, although it's a little bit deja vu with the kind of 69th minute goal from Cuthbert breaking the Spurs resolve, I think Spurs grew in confidence in this game. And I think that was maybe the only thing you could take away. I thought they played with two strikers in a 4-3-3 with Rhianna Dean kind of as a right attacker and Rosella Ayane in the middle, and then Addison on the left. And I think that helped Spurs have a few more players near the front of the pitch, and they actually got a lot more pressure. Obviously, if you're pressing in a three against the back four, you're only a player away from doubling up. So then if Josie Green steps forward or Percival steps forward, you can get quite good numbers. So I think Spurs deserve credit for trying to the high press, trying to win the territory, and that made Chelsea have to think twice. But they obviously still don't have enough quality. Rosella Ayan still looks pretty rusty, and it didn't really look like a goal was going to come unless it was from a Siri Vorm corner. And obviously, you know, Chelsea then get one, they get a second. Pernille Harder.
And still no Alex Morgan.
Still no Alex Morgan. I didn't think we need to bring that. I didn't want to save that for the weekend preview.
But that's what it almost feels like. Spurs are just waiting for her arrival and waiting for that, you know, what they're hoping she's going to bring, which I don't think she's necessarily going to be their saviour. And I think that's the worry, is I think there's a reluctancy to maybe face up to their issues, perhaps.
Maybe. Like I said, I think they tried to be more positive in this game. I don't know if they were expecting such a good Chelsea team to turn up, but I think they tried to be more positive. Pernille Harder missed an absolute sitter after about 10 minutes. I sent that tweet out about someone casting a spell on her. And it does feel like, whether it's Sam Kerr, whether it's Pernille Harder, whether it's even Beth England, who came off the bench in this game, and you kind of felt like Beth England for half an hour was just going to murder Spurs. And she really didn't. She looked really rusty. And so you kind of get the feeling that, like, something still isn't quite right, even if we saw it all click against Man City in that Chelsea trio. And I think Spurs did
Fran Kirby? Is she the missing link?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I thought G played really well in this game, especially on the counter-attack. G just looked like the fastest player on the pitch. So I think G Chelsea have the quality to replace Fran Kirby. Maybe it's the continuity, maybe it's the relationships, the personality that Fran brings that helps links these players together. But I don't think they're lacking quality. But yeah, maybe Fran kind of philosophically is the best link-up player. And we saw that a little bit in the Man City game as well. Fran was able to kind of get the assists as well as the goals. We had a question in I wanted to bring in right now and get your opinion on it. Andy on Instagram is an Australian who watches women's football and is obviously kind of watching it for Sam Kerr, but hasn't necessarily been watching the game for that long. And he feels like, from watching Chelsea this season, Sam Kerr is getting a lot of unwarranted criticism online for the way she's playing. She obviously didn't have a particularly potent night on Tuesday. Do you think the criticism of Sam Kerr in front of goal is unwarranted? Or do you think, you know, she deserves criticism? Or do you think maybe she deserves criticism, but the treatment on the medium of social media is not the answer?
I think if you're a big name player and you move to a league and you catch a lot of attention, a lot of eyes from the whole of the football community, people expect big things. But what I always say is about the impact Kerr's had in the team, contributions elsewhere, her movement off the ball. And perhaps that's, you know, what people forget, which is understandable because they want to see goals. And she holds records abroad in the league she's played in. So the expectations are huge. And maybe I'm being biased here, and I don't think England's performances at major tournaments would help support this case, although we've got lots of Europeans who play here. But I do think WSL defences are sturdier than NWSL defences. Now, this is probably a huge assumption, but I don't think, and that's not just defence either. We've talked about how it's a very different sort of football here. It's much more physical than they play in the NWSL. And I think players do struggle with that. So I think there's a stylistic thing that perhaps, you know, life isn't going to be so easy for Kerr here. I think there's similarities, but there's lots of things that she's probably still getting to grips with, but she has missed some sitters this season, so that would be disappointing for her. And like any striker, when you're out of form, you're out of form. But I think it's important not to forget some of the other contributions she's made.
Yeah, well said. I think Andy, if you are on Twitter, definitely go follow Jesse JPH as well, who has written a lot on this subject as well, of kind of what Sam Kerr does off the ball. One last thing on this match, on the subject of Australian players and Australian forwards, in Karen Hill's absence, she is isolating because of COVID. Juan Amaros brought on Alana Kennedy in the 65th minute to play up front. And again, this was annoyingly just before Spurs conceded their goal. But I really like that tactical move. And I think Juan was really trying to think outside the box. And again, that presence of Kennedy, that physicality, you talk a little bit about it as the WSL. You know, it's a really physical league. I think you saw some interesting alternative tactics kind of coming into Spurs a little bit there, where they thought they could try and throw something different at Chelsea. Obviously, it didn't work out. But a couple of more brownie points to Spurs for that one, albeit another loss. On a tough start to the season. I was able to watch some of the City Liverpool game, which was a really fun watch the next day. Man City, we were maybe expecting a bit of a champagne hangover, but they looked really good. And a bit like Chelsea, another strong 11. Lucy Bronze started, Rose Lavelle started, Sam Muir started. So yeah, it was a kind of another big, you know, so many big names against obviously an FA Championship side. They got a great win in the end, and it wasn't that difficult. But Liverpool made him challenge for a bit there. I really liked the winger Roberts on the right-hand side for Liverpool. Played really, really well. And then on the other side, Bubba Djude versus Bronze was an absolutely fantastic kind of one-on-one matchup the whole first hour. And sometimes I feel like when you watch a game of football, you can just zoom in on one matchup, just two players going at it. And Bubba Djude versus Bronze was just an absolutely great watch. It ended up being pretty easy for City in the end, but I think Liverpool looked really up for it. And that team definitely is kind of looking like they're in a really good spot to do things. Is there anything from that game, from the highlights, catch your eye, Flo?
Yeah, this was one of the games I watched on the highlights. It was a little bit painful. The FA Player Conti Cup highlights are intense.
Safety warning.
Safety warning on that one, yeah. But this was actually one of the better ones because I think the stream that City had, the camera quality was not bad. So this is one of the better highlight packages. And I think Laura Coombs's absolute screamer is probably going to be what will dominate our chat. But
Something just very different in that first touch.
I don't know if you heard, Theo, but I appreciated the analyst that you could hear in the background, who I think says, "Oh my God," when it goes in. I think he said, "Oh my God," or he says, "What a goal." But I loved being able to hear him on the recording, just in awe of that. Yeah, unbelievable goal. It's being shared on social media. Just touches it, like back heel control, and then flicks it in front of her and volleys it in. It's pretty sensational. And I thought the success that Liverpool had against United, they couldn't really do it here because City didn't really give them a chance. They didn't really have many opportunities from what I saw on the highlights to make the most of set pieces, corners, free kicks or anything like that. They didn't get very many opportunities, and there were moments where Bubba Djude was just about to come alive and she had a bit of a heavy touch or the final pass wasn't quite right. So I think on another day, they could have given City a much bigger challenge, but it wasn't terrible from Liverpool, but that quality from City just shone through. And I was really happy to see Rose Lavelle on the score sheet because there was a bit of chat after the FA Cup final that she didn't perform great and she looked pretty miserable when she got subbed off in the final. So it was good to see her on the score sheet. And that's the second goal she scored in the Conti Cup. And I think it's important to remember the goals she's scoring elsewhere because so much of the focus is going to be on her performance in the WSL and for all these new players that have come in because people get to watch it and people report on it and it's popular. Whereas the Conti Cup, we can't always watch the games. There's only limited highlights. I don't think many reporters went to the City game apart from local press. So the focus is going to be so much on her in the WSL and other players in WSL. So I think it's just really important to highlight and showcase the goals elsewhere to say, you know, they are performing, they are doing really well. It's just perhaps they're not doing it on the red button on a Sunday at 2 p.m. They're doing it midweek and, you know, only a handful are getting to watch it on YouTube or where it may be. So I was pleased to see Lavelle on the score sheet and just, yeah, loved the analyst commentary from Coombs's goal. It was just, yeah, like, oh, epic goal.
Did you feel anything emotionally seeing Bonner and Alex Greenwood line up together at left and right centre back? It was not so much competition as an alliance. How did that make you feel?
I had to wipe a tear from my eye, a tear that slowly dropped down my eye. Yeah, it was an emotional moment for everyone. I doubt we're looking at the future, but it was certainly interesting. And I reckon it's going to give Neville/Serena Wiegmann ideas, because it's a bit of a backup option now. But, I mean, they already have quite a few centre-backs to choose from. But perhaps Taylor is striking upon some sort of fantastic plan. I don't know. But, yeah, it's not looking too bad.
Yeah, Bonner got an assist with a very Steph Houghton-esque sort of lofted through ball. And it did make me think. Bonner is, she doesn't know how to hide from the headlines as a kind of maybe should be starting.
Hashtag free Gemma.
Yeah, starting in front of Steph or in front of Alex Greenwood. But yeah, definitely more fuel on the fire of that debate. What else from around the grounds on the midweek fixtures caught your eye, Flo? Leicester had a big, emphatic win over Blackburn, 5-2. Lewis's run of form came to an end, losing 1-0 to the Bees, although they did lose their first Conti Cup game. So Lewis seemingly focusing on the league. Durham got a huge win, 6 goals, 6 different goal scorers over Sheffield United, 6-0. West Ham beat Reading 3-0 in an all-WSL affair, which is probably where we want to stop there. That's quite impressive.
Yeah, I actually wanted to... Two games stood out for me on the sort of narrative, which was Arsenal-London City, mainly because the starting 11 that Montu Emiro put out was pretty strong, and I was surprised by that because of his injury worries. Emphatic win. I mean, Miedemar, just any sort of space and time you give her, she just smack it right into the corner. I don't think the London City team or coaching staff could quite believe how kind of she could just score from such tight angles.
It looked like Montemoro had placed a sort of like a training target or something in the bottom corners and the top corners of that goal. The way she finished into the corner was wild.
It was mad. And, I think that the one plus side of these weird FA player highlights and the way they're doing it, I think, on these AI cameras is that you do get to hear the coaches a lot. And I think that is quite interesting, hearing the commands and what they're saying to people. So that stood out for me just because I thought, interesting Montemuro's tactic here. I thought he would have played fewer of the first team, considering he's still got Kim Little out, Jordan Nobbs out, Jill Roard out, Steph Catley out, and none of them are that close to coming back either. I think three of those four are back at training, but Jordan Nobbs is only just running on her injury. So it's still a couple of weeks away. So I was just surprised. I thought that was interesting, but a big win. And I guess given Chelsea's rustiness, it's a confidence boost to then get everyone playing together again after a long break. And then the other one was the Sheffield United-Durham result. The 6-0. I was looking at this because it's so hard to find out how many changes were made and things like that in lineups. But I was having a look at Neil Redfern's comments underneath, and he said that they did make a lot of changes. I think they made 4 changes at least. New people came in, but the back four was the same, and a back four that's kept a lot of clean sheets and done really well this season. So it was interesting how quickly that unravelled. And obviously he wasn't too chuffed about it, but in a way he said, I'm not worried because the league is the focus and we're the top of the league, so that's what really matters. But I thought that was a very interesting, perhaps, look at what could be happening in the championship this season. And Durham, that's a real message to send, and hopefully they can push that form back into the league as well. So it's really interesting one for the division. So those were my two. I don't know if you had stand out and the fireworks at Dagenham Stadium, which
that's,
I enjoyed listening
that's exactly
to.
What I was going
to
bring up. I was like, well, you talk about hearing the managers, but I'm pretty sure I heard everyone in Dagenham's bonfire night display, thanks to the West Ham coverage. That was quite alarming. I mean, we've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about the logistics of trying to get our microphones to work, so I don't know who's doing the mics at West Ham's ground, but they're picking up half the village.
And I hope people realize I hope this is sounding good, because I've just spent a fortune on a new microphone. So I'm hoping you all are reaping the rewards in your earlobes. But yeah, I thought that was hilarious. And Rachel Daly on the score sheet. That's what we love
always,
to see.
Always great to see. Yeah, I think West Ham will be absolutely chuffed. It's their first win in 90 minutes this season. And Rachel Daly played out wide right. I obviously didn't watch the full 90. I couldn't find it, but I watched the highlights quite closely. And Daly was on the right-hand side of a front three. Martha Thomas is kind of back now from injury and looks like she is going to play the role maybe as the focal point, and Daly's going to kind of bring the width. And it worked. And I think this is a good Reading team who beat West Ham 1-0 in the league a month ago. A bit like we were saying, Reading didn't rest many players. It's a full strength team apart from the goalie. Naylor played instead. And I think West Ham will be really chuffed to get a really big win against a side they want to be chasing. And I think all the goals were almost identical. It was like a through ball, and then you had one player creating space and like drawing the defense or the goalkeeper away, and then they would cut it to another player to finish. And Martha Thomas didn't get on the score sheet, but she gets two assists, and both of them, you really see how well she can play as a target woman and draw that space away and then cut it back. Emily Van Egmond scored one of them, and Alicia Lehmann put the ball into an open net after Martha Thomas had done a lot of good build-up play. I really liked Noor Mustafa this season when she's come on and played that role in the last 20 minutes of West Ham. But after this game, I think I'd be very surprised if Matt Beard doesn't set up the same way and put Martha Thomas in the number nine role on the weekend. Although, you never know. Daly was playing that role at the beginning of the season. Mustafa's played it in certain stages. I definitely think against better opposition, West Ham can't necessarily play that open, but they want to play quite direct. I mean, Reading also missed two penalties. So this game could have been very different. Mackenzie Arnold makes an incredible save from the spot early on. And then Dan Carter puts the second penalty, slices it wide. So West Ham got a little bit of luck, but this is a really comprehensive win. And I think just huge, huge for Matt Beard, who obviously has been under a lot of pressure. So great week of Conti Cup action. Obviously, some games were called off due to incidents at the training ground or at the stadium, Everton, and due to COVID, with a player testing positive for Brighton. So not as many games as we thought this week, but we're going to take a quick break and then come back with some more news from around the world and a preview of this weekend's WSL fixtures. See you in a bit. Hello. All right. This is part two, Relatively Football. Something a little different for you. Okay. Everything's happening in the United States. And if we already had, lots of chaos, the NWSL and Lisa Baird decided to throw more at us. Today at about lunchtime over here, evening in the UK, the NWSL announced their protected and unprotected player lists for the expansion draft, which will happen a week today. So this kind of gave us the full scope of who will be leaving and will not be leaving their respective teams. Flo, what names jumped out to you on the list?
So I think the Orlando situation is one that you sent me that sort of caught my eye.
Probably the biggest names to be unprotected.
At first you think really interesting and a bit strange, but then actually when you sort of actually analyse it, you think it sort of makes sense. To be honest, thinking much more in the future, long term, and I was also thinking, is it perhaps a little bit of Brit favouritism from Mark Skinner? So he's chosen to protect Emsley and Moore. So I thought, and as well as Alex Morgan, I just thought that was interesting. Two people who haven't really had a chance yet to properly show themselves at Orlando because of what happened with the situation and what happened with the Challenge Cup. But I think they're both fantastic players. So obviously Alex Morgan is Alex Morgan, so you're probably going to protect her. But the decision not to protect Ali Krieger and Ashlyn Harris on the surface I thought was very strange, just because they are so Orlando. They embody that club, The way they represent the LGBT community in that city, what they've done for that city in terms of activism and what they did after the incident at the nightclub in Orlando, Pulse nightclub, the way they've been, you know, commemorating that moment ever since and really trying to be active in the community. I just think it would be really shocking to not see them in that Orlando environment, because they just, for me, sum up what Orlando is as a club and an organization. And, you know, everyone loves them. They're everyone's aunties and everyone's so close to them. Sidney LaRue is best friends with them. And I think they're just such important characters for the team. And I think it'd be difficult for them to cope without them. But at the same time, the likelihood of somebody wanting to pick up Ali Krieger, who is, you know, getting on a little bit, isn't part of the US national team plans anymore, probably not on their top priority list for picking up, really. And Ashlyn Harris, who's now, you know, third-ish choice goalkeeper for the US team, you know, a hilarious character that everyone loves and an athlete that works hard, but, you know, probably they don't think there's so many other goalies to choose from, of which Portland have plenty that they're not protecting, then perhaps it makes sense. So I think that was the real interesting one for me, but I know you've had a sort of bigger look elsewhere as well. I've sort of focused on Orlando.
No, I think that's a good place to jump off from, because I think it shows how you have to take the NWSL expansion draft protected list with a pinch of salt. It's not necessarily just protect your best players, it's protect your core players, it's protect the players you know who have a future at the club or a future in the game itself. The players who want to be there, I think, is going to come up. Tobin Heath, Megan Rapinoe, Christian Press. None of these players have been protected by their clubs. These are some of the best players in the league, and you're seeing clubs say, well, look, it's not worth it for us because they maybe don't play that much. Maybe they're not interested. Maybe they're on loan elsewhere. I think you can see a clue into, you know, it's a bit of a gamble. It's, you know, it's a bit like poker, because it's like, are you not putting your best players on there because they're unreliable and they're not going to play? Or are you not putting your best players on there because you think Louisville might take them, the new team? And when they get them, are they going to want to come back from Manchester? Or are they going to be available because of the Olympics next year? So some of these best players also, you know, you've got to think about their timeline. Sam Mewis, who is obviously contracted at Man City till 2021, was protected by North Carolina Courage, as a lot of people expected. She is young. She's been the core of that team. She's won a championship in North Carolina. Even with the contract situation internationally, they didn't want to let her go. And I think even though Louisville probably wouldn't have picked her up because of the Manchester City contract, I think that was a big sign there that North Carolina really see her as the heart of that team. And on Ashlyn Harris, I think there's a lot of other goalkeepers out there. Portland Thorns are overloaded with great goalkeepers, and they didn't protect any of them. So you've got Britt Ekstrom, Bella Bixby, and Adrian French, and, you know, they can take any of the, Louisville can pick up any of those keepers. So Harris, I think, will be staying in Orlando. Another one to watch on the unprotected list, obviously the Thorns have a lot of USA players, so they could only protect a couple of them, is Becky Sauerbrunn, who, Flo, I mean, you saw her in the flesh at the World Cup last year, you know, one of the best centre-backs in the world right now, you know, an absolute stalwart in the game, and maybe moving up in regards to her voice in the United States women's team as well. She is available, and I would be surprised if Louisville don't pick her up. That said, she is 34, and Louisville will get $75,000 for every national team player they don't take. So if they don't take Becky, they might have more money to play with on the wage bill in other areas. So it's going to be interesting to look at in that respect. Less familiar players you might not know about. Jennifer Cujo, who's had an amazing season. Great story, Ghanaian player. I know you're a big fan of the Ghanaian women's national team, Flo.
Yeah. The Black Queens, I think they're called.
Black Queens, not the Black Stars. Love that. Yeah, she is unprotected and had an amazing 2020, kind of a bit of an unknown player who came into the seasons, but has been fantastic. I'd be very surprised if Louisville don't pick her up from Sky Blue. Other big names not on there. Kawasami is surprisingly protected. Sabrina Flores is unprotected. Zdorsky, who's at Spurs, is unprotected. But again, Emily Van Egmond at West Ham is unprotected. But I don't know if we'll see these international players moving around. Brighton's Denise O'Sullivan was protected by North Carolina Courage, which I think is a sign of the quality she's brought to Brighton in the WSL this year, and that she'll be staying in North Carolina. So yeah, keep an eye on that. A week today. It's going to be really interesting to watch, especially if if Louisville were maybe courageous enough to take a Megan Rapinoe or a Christian Press, but my opinion is they will stay far away from these players who have not necessarily shown an interest in playing either through COVID, through tournaments, or in the United States. So yeah, really looking forward to that next week, and we will keep you posted. Should we move on to looking ahead?
What day is it? What day is it again, Theo? And can you watch it? Is it going to be live streamed? What's the situation?
Live streamed on Twitter and Twitch. It'll be free on the NWSL channel. I think it's a bit of a late one for the UK. I think it's a 11 p.m. kickoff.
Get your Diet Cokes out for that one, lads.
Yeah, it might be late espressos in lockdown too. For the London,
we ain't got London nothing else to do, so might as well watch the end of a cell draft.
Yeah. Should we move on to what's coming up this weekend in the WSL?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. What catches your eye, Flo? What's your game of the week?
I think that my game of the week's got to be Chelsea Everton, really, especially after Chelsea's softish performance, shall we say, midweek. I'm really intrigued to see how both teams react. Obviously, Everton with the slightly more to react to with their cup final defeat, and be interesting to see. They got more rest, which is great for them, I think, actually. Having their game called off is, in the long run, probably worked out quite well. So I'm really excited for that one, and it's going to be on BBC Red Button. So everyone be able to get to watch it, which is even better. So I think that's the standout for you.
And that's on that's
for,
on
sorry,
Sunday?
Not for you. It's the standout for me, that's mate. Standout What's for you? Your
is that,
standout?
Is that on Sunday, Flo?
Yes.
The early game on Sunday.
Sunday, 12 p.m. UK time, which is going to be an early one for you. What time's that like?
That's 7 a.m. Out here. For the Aussies out there who want to watch Sam Kerr and then criticise her on social media, that's about 10 p.m. So not too much Diet Coke needs to be consumed for that one. Yeah, I think that's a great game. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Hayes crams the tricky trio of Harder and England and Kerr together in that one. That'll be what I'll be looking out for, as well as if Izzy Christensen can have another fantastic game. She really upset Everton in the cup. Upset Chelsea in the cup and got that win for Everton. Everton obviously coming off a courageous loss in the cup final, and I think we'll see, you know, hopefully another big game out wide from Hayley Rasso and Sorensen, kind of maybe getting in behind those Chelsea fullbacks. The game of the week for me is probably the next game at the same time, I think, on Sunday, which for me is really bad timing, but I guess this is just life. Manchester United are hosting Arsenal. This is the game that gets me excited, because I think this is where we start to see how good are Arsenal. And you talked, you know, the squad's looking a little bit thin out there, but they're going to be playing a top five team for the first time this season in the league. They've already lost to Chelsea in the cup and City in the cup. So are we seeing cracks, or are Arsenal really here to make that title chance? Where do you think this game could be won and lost, Flo? Man U hosting Arsenal, noon on Sunday.
I think it's going to be a really interesting one. I think Man U are going to edge it, to be honest, just because of the firepower they have, and having had a lot of players who also didn't travel because of the situation coronavirus, who stayed here, and Lionesses, who ended up with only half a international break. So of their players that are fit, they're going to be really well rested. So I see Man U coming out on top of this one. Arsenal not only have all their injury problems, but they also played midweek, and yeah, I think Arsenal are going to have a really tough task on their hands.
Arsenal tend this season, again, against weaker opposition, tend to get out ahead, and then the opposition really has no chance to come back, or that maybe it takes them a while to crack the opposition, but once they do, there's a flood of goals. How do you think Casey Stoney and Manchester United are going to manage this game? Because they're arguably going to have the more strength on the bench than Arsenal will. So do you think they play Russo and Press, which we haven't seen that much of? Or do you think they just play one of them, so they have kind of the ace up their sleeve off the bench?
I think I would go for it. I would definitely start Russo. I think she deserves it. She's been fantastic in every minute of every game she's played. Like, just so exciting to watch, and the energy she brings when she comes on. I think Casey Stoney's got to go for it. I think she's got to put out a really attacking side, and I think she'll smell blood a little bit, because there are a lot of weaknesses at Arsenal at the moment, and I think I think they can definitely capitalize that on those missing players in midfield, and they can dominate with their pace, with Heath and press, and with their strength and their size as well. I really think that Man U are going to dominate this game, and I will probably be eating my words next week when we record the next podcast.
A bit like I was saying about Baba Gide versus Bronze is one of the highlights of the midweek game. Definitely keep an eye on Jackie Cronin versus Daniela van der Donk in an all-Dutch dicey...
And they're both pretty feisty players.
They're absolutely aggy.
They both love a
aggy
lot of back chat. Yeah, they love so much back chat to each, to other players, to the referee. Just unnecessary back chat. So, no, that's gonna be a good one to watch.
It's going to be a great watch. And, yeah, like you said, I could see Arsenal really dominating possession, but kind of Man U withstanding it and then having, like, someone like Arusso or Press come off the bench and kind of nick that late goal. I'm going to go for a 1-0 Man U prediction on this flow. I don't know if you got any feelings on that.
I think there's going to be more goals. I think with Miedemar, I think Arsenal are going to get a goal because they've got Miedemar, and she's just so potent. I think it's going to be 3-1 Man U. I think it's going to be a lot of goals in this one. And I think it's on FA Player, is it?
Yeah, all the games will be on FA Player. I think the Chelsea one has the red button. The other ones are just on FA Player. But yeah, these games, I think, at the same time. So you might have to try and have the double box or...
Oh yeah, the multi-screen.
You might have to have Always the multi-screen fun. if you fancy on watching both the games of the week. Just hopping back to Saturday for a second. There is a 2 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. This one, I think, is the next biggest game, because Spurs, we were just talking, more brownie points, but not actual points during the week. Can they get a result against Reading at home? And will we see Alex Morgan? There, we had it.
Oh, I hope we see Alex Morgan. I really do. Otherwise, I'm just almost thinking, kind of, what's the point?
Shirt sales, baby.
Shirt sales, baby. But actually, do you know what? Shout out Alex Morgan for telling off her mum on Twitter for tweeting about Donald Trump. Respect that, love that. Alex Morgan, you've won a new fan. And
What's more likely? Alex Morgan plays, or Alex Morgan unfollows her mother on Twitter for tweeting about Trump?
Probably Alex Morgan unfollowing her mum on Twitter for tweeting about Trump, judging by how long this election's going to roll on for. But
mate, yeah, 2021, this election will still be going on. So.
Yeah, and 2021, Alex Morgan will still not have played for Spurs, I'll tell you that much. So I think Reading are very inconsistent, and to be fair to them, that Man City performance built a lot of confidence in them at the back, because they've been quite leaky until that game this season, and they withstood a lot of attack and were strong in defence. And I think, yeah, they faced double figures, 20 shots, I think, in that game. So they had to really not even park the bus, but just be organised, and that's something that they've struggled with recently. So I think that would have built confidence, but then they did lose to West Ham 3-0 in the week, and that wasn't a great performance. So I'm going to go 2-1 Reading, just because Spurs really struggled to score, but I'll let them have a goal.
I'm going to go 1-0 Spurs. Siri Vorm corner, anyone gets a touch on it and it's going in.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this game is just coming at the right time for Spurs. I think Reading, like you said a couple of weeks ago, would probably have put this to bed. But I kind of feel like this is going to be a bit of a statement game for Spurs, saying, hey, we're not totally rubbish. But I feel like I've bigged up Spurs again and given them brownie points. So happy to be wrong. 3 p.m. on Saturday, Man City return to action in the league after, you know, a huge win at Wembley on the last weekend. This game, we don't really have anything to say beyond we expect City to win. But Flo, if Bristol are to do the impossible and win away at Manchester City, how do they do it? And that's our show.
Park the bus and hope to pick up a penalty or something on the break or a tap-in from a corner. Apart from that, I don't give them a massive chance, to be honest. Apologies, Bristol City, but yeah.
Fair enough. I thought they did well against Arsenal. The other kind of they are a big team. They struggled. They got smashed by Chelsea, but they did quite well against Arsenal with five at the back. And I wonder if we're going to see the same kind of thing. It's going to be all about bodies. It's going to be all about limiting the wide areas, at which case I think you're going to see a player like Sam Mewis probably be the one to step up. And I think you'll start to see City put a lot more balls in the box and maybe get that extra fullback movement from Lucy Bronze. I don't predict City can hold on. But I think they're Bristol City, that is. But I don't think they're going to do much more than just put a lot of bodies behind the box. I think we're going to see Ellen White come back into the team as well after a really tough afternoon in the cup final. Didn't play midweek, or she came off the bench midweek. And I think Ellen White is going to be dying to get on the score sheet because I still feel like there's a lot of questions there. So it's going to be a big one for her. And maybe, like you said, Rose Lavelle might kind of build her morale as well with some goals. Heading back to Sunday, this is after the early kickoffs, the games of the week. You got 2 p.m. Brighton are at home to Aston Villa. Villa we haven't seen for absolutely ages because of a COVID outbreak and then an international break. Brighton now have their own COVID outbreak of their own. Do you know if this game is going to happen, Flo? From what I could read, it plans to be on and the player is self-isolating and everyone they came in contact with is also self-isolating.
Yeah, it's one of those things which I struggling to understand in football because it doesn't really fall in line with the rest of sort of national policy on self-isolating and tracking and tracing, which has been pretty disastrous in the UK, to be honest. But it's the way it's working across football. And if you are a player or a coach that tests positive, people who've been very close to you need to isolate. But apart from that, there are lots of cases where the team can go on and play, and they have in men's football a lot. So it's not a massive issue. So I think if they think currently that it's going to happen and they don't have any more positive tests, then it will happen. It will be whether they have positive tests in the group probably by tomorrow, I would imagine.
Do you think Villa will try and play a little bit more defensive in this game, or do you think they have to go out and get something? Because obviously Brighton, lower half team traditionally, this is the kind of game Gemma Davies is going to be trying to get a point or at least one, maybe even three. Do you think they line up and go for it at the first? If it's 0-0 after 70 minutes, they go for the win. Obviously, they still have 0 points. Do you think they're going to be courageous, or do you think they're going to be kind of playing it safe? Villa, that is.
I think this is a good opportunity if they sense a bit of a weakness with Brighton and perhaps whoever is going to be not playing, self-isolated, whatever it may be, that is an opportunity if this is not the starting 11 they would want to play. And if Brighton are really going to have to be scraping the barrel with their team selection, then I think, yeah, it's a massive opportunity that they can try and harness. And Brighton have been in, were a team that have been in good form. And so the break coming when it did and for such an extended amount of time wouldn't have helped them because they had formed, you know, quite a strong bond with the team they had and were performing well. So I think this is a good opportunity for Villa to try and pick up points, and they need to start quite soon.
Finally, on the weekend's fixtures, Birmingham City are at home to West Ham United. This game is really well timed for West Ham, but also, again, before the break, Birmingham were the kind of the hot team who were really starting to get going, and Carlo Ward was the manager of the month. So we kind of have two different managers in two different dire straits. Matt Beard finally has a great result. Do you think they can get their first league win, West Ham, or do you think Birmingham are going to be calm, cool, collected, defensive, and as we've seen this season, incredibly efficient at taking chances?
I think see Birmingham definitely getting a point and potentially getting all three in this, because West Ham are just so sloppy. The two penalties they gave away against Reading midweek were so poor. So poor. I think it's a relief that going forward, they're looking a lot more confident. They're taking their chances early. Lehman had a few good chances that she didn't put away the other night. So I think that's a real positive. Adrian Leon played well and linked up well with Lehman. I think that's really great for West Ham, but they still look so sloppy defensively. And I think Birmingham are in such good form and feeling so confident. I think they're just smarter and more organised. And I can't think of the word I want, but you know, they just don't make rash decisions. I think they're just smarter. They play smarter than West Ham do at the moment. I think West Ham panic a little bit. I think they're quite sloppy and it is punishing them. And I think Birmingham are just becoming very smart in the way they play and understand their ability and what they have and are using it very well.
Yeah, I'm interested to see this kind of clash of the most organised team in the WSL versus potentially the least organised team, or definitely West Ham are the most inconsistent team. They've shown flashes that they can be quite good, but it's going to be a really interesting kind of clash of styles. Definitely keep an eye out to see if Martha Thomas plays and plays so well. One little nugget I want people to watch out for from my experience of watching the NWSL, Rachel Daly loves playing against the Utah Royals, has an amazing scoring record against them, and often rinses Rachel Causey when they've played each other in the NWSL.
Revenge game.
So it's a bit of a sneaky revenge game to see Rachel Causey at the back for Birmingham versus Rachel Daly. So likewise, I think Rachel Causey is going to have a bit of an old score to settle against Daly, who often is quite good at taking her on one-on-one or leaping over and scoring a header. Scored a goal against her in the Challenge Cup, just blazing in behind her from a Christy Mewis through ball. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if Daly gets some joy against Rachel Causey. But like I said, maybe it might be Martha Thomas in the number nine. Before we get out of here, do you want to just touch on what's going on in the quote-unquote non-elite world of women's football right now as we head to lockdown 2.0 in England?
Yeah, it's all a bit of a mess, to be honest. It hasn't been a great week for the FA. I guess looking at women's football specifically, the way that a lockdown in the UK has affected the women's competitions, it's basically created this almost Victorian-like division where you have non-elite and elite players, and everything below the championship is classified as non-elite, regardless of the club, who the player is, whether they're paid or not, or whatever it may be. And it's really frustrating because it means that the competition and the fixture list there comes to a halt. And you've got players like Helen Ward, who scored for Wales just last week in a European qualifier, has over nearly 90 caps for Wales, and she's not playing anymore. And you're effectively saying you're not professional, you're not an athlete anymore. You've got to go back and do whatever is the part-time job you do, or perhaps you don't even have a part-time job. This is your only job. So I just think it's very frustrating because these sorts of things always affect women's sport, because women's sport is less developed than men's sport, not really through any fault of its own, but because of the systems in place. And with football, you know, that the 50-year head start that men's football got, if you like. So that's really frustrating. And then because of this elite, non-elite split, it means that the Women's FA Cup has been suspended, yet the Men's FA Cup continues because there are 10 non-elite teams competing in the first round, and the government or the FA, the government's given them exemption, but no one really knows if the FA applied for the exemption. They haven't really said. I've asked them, no one replied. So it's all a bit shady. And I think, you know, there's discussions, I think, about how they can continue the Women's FA Cup, but on so many levels, it's disappointing. It's disappointing because the fixture list is already insane and so busy. So creating even more pressure doesn't make sense to me. But it's also disappointing because you're just sending the message that, you know, no one cares about the Women's FA Cup, and they don't need to already say that message, to be honest, because it's loud and clear when you look at the prize money. I mean, the fact that the winning club for the first round of the Women's FA Cup gets £850, the losing club gets £250, and when you look at the men's tournament in comparison, it's about £8,000, I think, versus £15,000 for that first round. So it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I can understand it's really important that we keep, you know, the other teams in the men's pyramid afloat, but we also have to do the same for the women's. And there's already so many things that imply that women's football and women's sport doesn't matter. But to see it that in that black and white way of, you know, sorry, you can't play anymore, it's just really disappointing. But lots of people have made a noise about it, and I think there is pressure from the sector as a whole to change the ruling and to try and support sport happening during the lockdown. So at the moment, it's suspended for a month until the UK comes out of this lockdown on December 2nd. So we shall wait and see. But yeah, it's frustrating. but I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it as things develop.
And as it stands right now, things should unlock on the 2nd of December, but we will see that when we believe it. In Brighton News, 1.6 million people did watch the FA Cup final last weekend, so people do care about the FA Cup and women's football. And, you know, let's smash the patriarchy one cup competition at a time, you know? Well, yeah, that's about all we got today. And it's going to be a great weekend. Go watch some women's football. Go for a walk. Switch your phone off. Drink lots of water. Wear a mask, of course. Yeah, stay positive. Any last words, Flo?
I think that's it, mate. It's all we can do, really. Just keep fighting. It's a strange time at the moment, but it's good to know that lots of people who listen to this podcast enjoy it, and we love doing it, and, you know, we love engaging with you guys on Twitter and sending everyone funny memes and you guys sending us memes, because memes is what is going to get us through these next few weeks and months ahead. So keep the memes going. Keep the memes alive.
Keep the memes alive, yeah. And yeah, it's a pleasure to be able to hang out with my sister a couple of days a week, at the very least, and chat football. I feel like we used to just do it in the WhatsApp, like via text. So it's nice. It's nice at least to see your face and do what we used to do before we did the show anyway. Well, yeah, that's about all we got. Please let us know if the mic sounded good. Otherwise, go get some sleep and be well. All right. Lots of love. Bye.